What the daily weather stats would say, I'm not so sure. But whatever we have been suffering through the southeaster in the Cape Town summer is nothing to what, particularly in Mozambique, but also in neighboring Malawi, Zimbabwe, people there have been suffering as a result of tropical cyclone Idai. Jens Pedersen is a senior humanitarian policy advisor with Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders. Jens, good afternoon. What is the latest information that you've been able to gather from the ground in those three countries?
Good afternoon, John. Thanks for having us on the show, and good day to your listeners as well. To be very honest with you, John, the situation is still very, very difficult to predict. We are still finding it difficult to reach areas which have been flooded, which remain flooded, in particular in some more peripheral areas. We've seen lots of photos from Beira in Mozambique, which is a reasonably large city. But in some of the more remote areas from that, we are still yet to see what's beyond the tip of the iceberg, so to say.
Does that mean that there hasn't been sufficient aerial footage of those areas to give humanitarian organizations like yours a sense of what damage might have been done?
Well, aerial footage is one thing. It's one part of an assessment. Another part is to get people on the ground, people who can assess, let's say, more technical things, more practical things than you can do from the air, such as the state of health facilities, the state of wells and water supplies, and also to assess what are the medical needs that people may have sustained due to injuries or due to the medical conditions they may have had already, underlying, of course, the vulnerability that they are exposed to new sort of medical complications in the flooded environment.
What needs to happen for you to because you need the information so you can plan relief properly. You need to know how many people are without safe drinking water. You need to know what the threat of cholera is so you can get anti-cholera treatments in, water purification treatments. There's a whole range of things because you don't want to be sending too much to an area or too little to an area. So how far away are you from getting the kind of information you need? And, you know, given the fact that it's a week since the worst of the actual weather damage, how much suffering has there been as a result of environmental conditions, meaning that organizations like yours can't get onto the ground?
Well, it's a very good question, John. There's absolutely no doubt that the suffering has been and remains tremendous of the people that have suffered, whether it's floods in Beira, whether it's land and mudslides in Zimbabwe, or the floods which have been going on for several weeks prior to the cyclone hitting parts of southern Malawi. And of course, immediate needs is one thing. We can see already now that the cyclone, the water, has done away with food crops at a very large scale, although the specific quantification of that is not yet done. So, of course, there is. It's a tremendous sort of, I don't want to say package, but amount of items we need. First, we need the basics to respond to shelter. People have had their houses destroyed, at best very damaged. So people need shelter. People need food because their food supplies have been washed away. People then need medical care, but above all, they also need clear drinking water, as you say. And there's different ways that can be done, either via purification, which with chlorine, for example, but also by installing purification plants, which is what we are working on, some of the supplies we are sending. It really, I mean, over the past, I think, 2 or 3 days, we are sending almost 50 tons of emergency supplies from across the world and across the continent to the affected areas.
One of the issues that you must be wrestling with as well, not just your organization, but others, is that in the immediate aftermath, the world's TV cameras are there, Reuters and the SABC and ENCA and BBC and so on, are sending teams there with cameras, and they telling these truly heart-rending stories about loss, about the loss of life, about the loss of infrastructure, about damage to agriculture, and then people are inclined to give, but now, you know, those cameras are starting to move on because there's another disaster. There's a developing story somewhere else in the world, and it becomes then more difficult for organizations like yours to get the funds that you need in order to do the work that needs to be done for literally months after Idai has passed into meteorological history.
Absolutely, I agree with you, John, and it's sadly what we experience, our media and what listeners and viewers and readers like to receive as well. I'll give you an example. So our organization, for example, we've been working in Beira Hospital for several years, and we've been doing so, providing treatment for HIV patients. Now we'll continue to do so, but of course now we have to rehabilitate clinics and hospitals, which is not something that's done overnight. And I think to give you the simple answer, I'll throw it back to you and speak with us again in 1 month, in 2 months, John, and keep making sure that our people in South Africa knows that our brothers and sisters in our neighboring country is still, by then, I would worry, still have a way to go.
And in those 2 months, things will happen in South Africa. There will be drought. There will be flooding somewhere. There will be big fires in townships around Port Elizabeth and Cape Town and Johannesburg. And where do our priorities lie? I mean, you know, it's just so incredibly difficult when there is so much environmental disaster in so many parts of the underdeveloped world. And we just have to give thanks that there are organizations like yours that are there working even when the limelight isn't on you.
Yes, we don't have a choice, John. That's the simple sort of answer to that. But thanks very much for your support and the sort of credit that you are giving the work that we do.
What is your overall sense of just how bad this is for those three countries? How long it's going to take to restore some semblance of normality to the lives that have been disrupted, to rebuild the bridges, to rebuild the homes, to purify the water, to plant and harvest crops again, restore vaguely acceptable health services?
It's going to take a tremendous effort, and it's going to take very, very long time, John. And in Beira, for example, where we worked and we assessed, I think 90%, if not a little bit more, of the local health facilities were destroyed one way or the other. So that gives you a sense of and of course, clinics and hospitals are not the only ones affected, people's house. And different parts of this sort of response and support will take different period of times. There will be current and immediate risks of health conditions of deteriorating. There will be subsequent need for extra food, planting, supplies. It's not something that communities get over the moment the water recedes. A lot of people have lost family members and loved ones in the affected communities. So, of course, it's a major, major trauma for many of these communities and the people who are affected at the moment.
Thank you for talking to us and sharing with us some of a sense of the scale of this disaster. Jens Pedersen is a senior humanitarian policy advisor with Médecins Sans Frontières.